Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I will have a couple of beers because you're in Germany, so you got to have a beer.
Yeah, you're in Germany. Yeah. No, this is all going tits up. Seriously, you're getting very, very badly pissed.
But the thing with Brasser, he doesn't even drink.
Yeah, yeah.
It's part of the official thing though, because I'll be insulting them by not taking any beer. Because it says, of course, there will be time for a few delicious beers.
Yeah, yeah. It says at 12:24.
Yeah.
And then at 2:38. It's so German in its efficiency.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's so packed in. I will have a few beers, but I'm not going to go crazy. All right, get your cans on, mate. A mixed night at best for Real Madrid in their Champions League round of 16. First leg against Manchester City last night at the Bernabeu. Now, they're still in the tie, despite losing 2-1 and losing Sergio Ramos to yet another red card. But my first question about this game, guys, is has Real Madrid's Champions League aura now officially disappeared?
I think there was a feeling last night, that the game was just always there, I think, for City, and Pep identified a tactical change just to swing it his way. And usually Real Madrid would have stamped their authority on that game. But I think other than the goal, they had a 10-minute spell where they looked for the second goal. And then when they didn't get it, they just kind of gave up and then coasted the rest of the game. City had it about them to come and they saw the game there to be won or at least get a draw.
Do you honestly think they gave up? They just ran out of ideas and that was that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in a previous era, somebody, maybe Cristiano Ronaldo, he might have spurred them on. He goes, like, come on, not on my watch.
Yeah.
We need to get this tie done. We need to get this tie finished. And it's strange because there's still so many of the old guard there. But no, they just lack that killer instinct, I think. And then Zidane's change was very strange when he took Vinicius off. Suggestions of cramp, but it was strange to bring Bale on, who, I don't know, isn't really a serious footballer anymore.
Is he? Wow.
Absolutely outrageous stuff.
We're going to come back to that in a minute. We're definitely coming back to that in a minute. Because for me...
He listens, you know.
Really?
You've got to ruin his Thursday, mate.
Oh, unbelievable. You're going to have Jonathan Barnett on the line.
Yeah, right? No, you will.
He loves a quote.
Yeah,
you're about to ruin his round anyway.
Yeah.
But I think... The thing that struck me is when Vinicius went for Bale, it was the most obvious Zidane hook, really, because he switches to 4-4-2. Mm-hmm. Isco ends up playing that spot that he played in 2017. And when Luke's talked before about this being a, you know, Real Madrid 2017 tribute act, I think maybe that's part of the problem, isn't it? That they've sort of gone back to that, because Vinicius was the guy who provided the most energy and most invention in that second half, wasn't he?
Yeah, but if you want to retain that energy, why not bring Marcelo on and play him higher up? He can't really defend anymore, Marcelo. Mm. So why don't you play him as a left winger? Mm. And I would have taken Isco off as well. You know, if you are...
He didn't do anything apart from the goal, really,
exactly.
Did he?
Exactly. He's notorious.
I don't like it when people say that. It's like the old adage about apart from that, how did you enjoy the theatre, Mr. Lincoln? It's like, that is a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Isco played his part and then left, basically. But if you're quite lethargic in the game, you're quite slow, and Isco is notorious for this, being quite ponderous, you bring him off. If you want some urgency, you take the guy who slows your team off down. You take him off. And they didn't do that. And it was very, very strange from Zidane. I think Zidane...
He was subbed off, wasn't he? It was very late on.
Yeah, very, very... It was far too late. I was going to say that Zidane, I think, had a chance to... And this was the difference, I think, on the night. Pep made a proactive change. Hmm. He saw the weakness that they had at the back with Carvajal. Hmm. He identified that, and then he slung on... You know, he had De Bruyne and Sterling going at Carvajal down that side. And that little space between the fullback and the centre-back, they were just darting through.
And it was such a rash challenge for someone of that sort of experience, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
By
Carvajal, on Sterling.
Maybe it's catching.
And Sterling did make an enormous difference. There's no doubt about that. And I think when you think the reaction to the team that Guardiola, the 11 that Guardiola picked.
Yeah, he took pelters for that.
He did, didn't he? But actually, I think the smart thing about that, and it's quite a simple thing, is the fact that you look at the bench and you look at the fact that the way it went on Saturday for Real Madrid at Levante, and they were the better team for most of that, but somehow managed to lose it.
Yeah.
And despite so much has been made of that Jose Luis Morales quote where he said, well, I couldn't run anymore, so that's why I belted in that wonder goal, because I simply couldn't run it into the corner. But the fact is, they were stronger in the last 25 minutes of that than Real Madrid were physically.
Yeah.
So we know Guardiola pours, like, very, very closely over the previous performances of the team. And he said it, didn't he, in the pre-press conference. He's like, well, I don't see Madrid as often as I used to. Mm. So, you know, Thomas Müller made that quote, didn't he, about, you know, he gives us too much information. He over-prepares. He worries about the opposition too much. And that's something that's...
Especially when laid up against Zidane, the other dugout, who does it almost next to nothing, from what I've read.
I was about to say, he's like that.
It's something that's brought up consistently with Guardiola. But Guardiola, I think he responded quite well to that Müller thing, where he said, you know, my players can never say they're underprepared. And he said, well, I don't see Madrid as often as I used to. So I've had to spend a few days looking after them. And he will have looked at that game so closely. And I think that's exactly what he tried to do. I think he's thought, well, you know what? Let's stay in the game and just go after them in the last 25 minutes. Yeah. And that's how it worked out.
Yep. So Dave, to give you a further kind of context of something Andy mentioned about my opinion of Real Madrid under Zidane, and I'm happy for you to disavow me of any of these opinions. I just feel like when he went back... You know, people can say the usual stuff about I'll never go back and never kind of tarnish your legacy. But that aside, his challenge to me and to other people was just completely different. It was now you need to reinvent this team, bring these different players through, not kind of relax into and rely on kind of old tropes and old players that you trusted before, and usher in a new maybe era strong, but a new team at least who can go and compete in a different way and in a better way or whatever. I mean, not better because he's won however many things he's won, but in a different way. And he's just not done that. I feel like he's been too tempted to revert to type whenever things have got slightly difficult. Is that fair or is that a bit unfair?
No, I think that's really accurate. And the thing is, we don't know if he's that type of coach yet. The early signs are, you know, it's still early in his managerial career when you look at it, really.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, it doesn't look like he's that type of coach. And there's not many coaches about who you think, oh, he could come in and usher in the new era. It's a difficult thing to do. And it's even more difficult at a club like Real Madrid, who have to win all the time. There's no transition phase allowed. You have to keep winning. And Zidane's remit is, okay, keep winning, challenge for the Champions League, challenge for La Liga. Oh, but you have to integrate 18-year-old Brazilians who have just come over, from their like one professional season. It's things like that. You know, that's difficult to do, I think.
Yeah, and it will continue to be that job with the arrival of Renier, won't it?
Yeah, and it's up to Florentino Perez to look at it and go, all right, okay, I'm going to allow these results. I'm going to allow us to maybe knock out the Champions League in the last 16. I'm going to allow this.
And I understand he's got a challenge and it's a difficult club and he's probably afforded more time than most because of who he is. But I mean, you mentioned the Levante game, the midfield three of Kroos, Modric and Casemiro.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's the same.
But
it's the same old shit.
To me, that proves how important Federico Valverde is to them already.
Yeah.
You look at the players they left out for the Levante game is very instructive. Mm. The fact that Mondi was on the bench, the fact that Valverde was on the bench, that's very important. He is trying to make that team younger. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that's something that you could justly criticise him for in the back end of his first spell in charge. So going back to 2018... But is it happening quickly enough, I guess, is the question.
It's why I didn't want Christian Eriksen as well, because that would have set the team back further. You know, he explicitly said to Perez, look, I don't want him, I want a younger midfielder. And this summer they will spend, I reckon, about 80, 100 million on a big centre midfielder to try and bring down the age of the squad.
And I understand that he's resting players ahead of a big Champions League game, but I mean, he played two of the three of them in midfield last night anyway, right? So,
yeah, I thought Modric was an interesting pick. I think when you bear in mind that one of Modric and Kroos has to sit that game out.
And I would have sat Modric. I know it's great in hindsight. But Kroos is in great form. He's in his back in his peak form when he's best Toni Kroos. And Casemiro's in good form. So for me, it had to be Modric, who's on a clear decline.
Yeah, he is. And I think Casemiro suffered a little bit against City, but without that extra mobility next to him. I think there was far too much on Valverde. Modric was struggling to stay in the game, I felt. And if you boil it down, quite simply, the fact that Real Madrid are not a team that's... Because people can be a little bit hoodwinked because it's Zidane and it's Real Madrid. They're not a pretty side. They're not a side that is a possession-heavy side. Mm. So they're always going to have less of the ball. I think in that situation, Kroos' set pieces are absolutely vital. And why you would deprive yourself of that, to me, is extraordinary.
Very quickly in a sentence, because a lot of our listeners are English football fans as well. Was that a coming-of-age performance by Man City in the Champions League? Did they break through a glass ceiling last night, or is it too early to say?
Too early to say. Ask me at the end of the second leg.
Okay.
Real Madrid have been shit quite a lot in the home legs of the knockouts, so don't write them off yet.
Yeah, these two just love Spanish football, that's why I don't know. let's just wrap up the other game that happened last night before we go on to Tuesday's games. Obviously, Lyon beat Juventus 1-0 in Lyon. Some of Maurizio Sarri's comments were quite odd, and I think, to my memory, this is the as I was saying before we came in, this is the third time he's either intimated or explicitly stated that he hasn't been able to get an idea across to his team. He did it at Chelsea a couple of times, I think, and he's done it again here at Juventus. In this case, it was specifically about the players not moving the ball quickly enough.
But the way you point it out, the way you frame it, makes it seem like, oh, it's me not framing my ideas correctly. Mm. Whereas he's not saying that. He's saying, you're too bloody stupid to get it.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
And also, he's not even got the idea, he can't even hide behind the idea that he's speaking in the second language. He said it in Italian last night. So that was his native tongue. So I know he's got a reputation for kind of speaking his mind and not having any filter on what he says.
I thought you were going to say not having any friends. He certainly won't have any friends by the end of it. It's like Thomas Tuchel.
The only filter he's got is in the fags that he eats.
that's right.
But what do you make of that? Because it's a poor result for them. It's a surprising result to me, at least. And maybe you could tell me, okay, you agree, so great. They're not out of the tie, of course, but... Is the pressure ramping up on Sarri now?
Absolutely, because they were jettisoning Allegri because they thought they were subscribing to a higher philosophy of football. I think if you look at a comparable club in Bayern when they got in Pep Guardiola. That's because they had everything sorted out. They were winning commercially. They're very successful. They're more successful than any other club in the country. They wanted to create a Bayern brand of football. And that's the cycle that started. I think if you look at the way Marty Perenau described it in Pep Confidential, it sort of started with Van Gaal, went through Heinkes, and then Guardiola's the kind of apex of that, really. But for Juventus, this was them moving on from purely results-based football. But you haven't had the football or the sort of imperious aura so far, have you?
No, it's absolutely... You know, I think you make the point there about Pep being the apex. I mean, Sarri is no Pep.
No.
He's nowhere near him.
No.
So they've got like a really, really low budget version of Pep. Mm. I think if they wanted to do this, they should have gone maybe for Tuchel, who's a little bit more closer. But Sarri, I think his methods will be too abrasive at Juve. You can see a big, big fallout there, I think, happening. And if Juve can get a different coaching in the summer, then they'll probably do it. I think if they get that, the sense that they can do that.
David, you also enjoyed performance of one or two of Lyon's midfield players as well.
Yeah, I thought Bruno Guimarães and Lucas Toussaint were excellent together. And it's strange because Toussaint's obviously leaving the club and he's coming to...
Gone to bigger and better things.
Yeah, apparently so.
Hertha. I mean, imagine scoring the winner in front of a full 60,000 stadium in the Champions League. And you're like, oh, fuck's sake, you've got to play for Hertha in 6 months' time.
At least he hasn't got to play under Klinsmann.
No, that's
a little bonus.
That is true. And there is a consolation of living in Berlin and having a truckload of money
for
your trouble.
And Hertha are a team, we don't want to get onto Hertha because we talk about them a lot and because they're hilarious.
Jürgen Klinsmann's still talking about them a lot.
Yeah. Privately, but also publicly.
Through leaks.
We don't want to get onto that. But is it a shame that someone like Toussaint, having performed like that, is now going to go and ply his trade at a team who, you know, probably will be in the Bundesliga next season, but the fact that we're even having a conversation they might not be when he's played like that in a knockout game of the Champions League.
All I would say in this situation is he's a horse for a course. He was given a very specific role by Rudy Garcia, and given that Rudy Garcia is always being ragged in France for his very average Champions League record, especially for a guy who's coached the clubs that he has, certainly numbers wise is pretty poor. I think that this was a real victory for Garcia, who's had a difficult time at Lyon, who's found it difficult to be accepted by the supporters. But playing Bruno Guimarães is a huge risk, actually, because he's just come over to, you're talking about a new continent, new country, new club, and he's only made his debut on Friday, in which he was very good away at Metz. Yeah. But he's a player who is a complete novice at this level. He didn't play like that at all. He essentially is the reason that they feel they can let Toussaint go. And Juninho, the sporting director, has said throughout the season that we want a technically better version of Toussaint.
And looking at Juninho, he almost certainly sold him for Bitcoin as well, because he basically looks like some kind of San Francisco based like tech guy now, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he doesn't do that thing where he sits on the bench and sort of breathes down the coach's neck. He's upstairs with his old mate Claudio Cassapa and all the technical video guys, and they were going absolutely bonkers when Toussaint scored.
But on TikTok probably.
because Bruno Guimarães was so good, Toussaint did help him in that sense, because the idea was, well, we know Pjanic is going to play this kind of regista role, and the composition of the Juve midfield is a different question, but they know Pjanic very well, of course, at Lyon. So the idea was for Toussaint to play a little bit further forward than normal and hassle Bentancur, hassle Pjanic, and stop them getting the ball out. And because he's playing that little bit further forward, that's how he ends up scoring the goal, because he's further forward than he normally
would be. Juve did have a lot of the ball, though. They were just not very particularly effective with it. Is that fair?
In the second half, certainly.
Yeah.
And I think Lyon were just defending in the second half. That's all it was, really. But what a player like Bruno Guimarães can do, I think to have a player who can win his tackles, can be responsible in front of the back four, get stuff done in a really small space. And you know, we're talking about Toni Kroos. You know, that's why people set him up as a potential defensive midfielder at some point, because he's comfortable with three players on him and he can still get the ball out and deliver it. He lands so many of his passes, Bruno Guimarães. I mean, it's my first time seeing him, so he's an absolute revelation to me. But, you know, the only reason he's come, really, is Juninho. He could have gone to Atletico Madrid, who had an option on him. And Juninho, who's had a very, very difficult time as sporting director so far, and actually said in the lead up to the game, well, look, my history with the club, which obviously is impeccable as a player, is not going to save me if I'm not good enough in this job. This could be a turning point for him to make a signing like this, that you get in front of quality rivals, big European teams who also want him, to get him in. And he's a player who could be great for them for a couple of seasons, and then they could sell him for a fortune. If that pans out, this is a huge feather in Juninho's cap.
And let's move to the Tuesday night games as well then, and cover those, because after that performance from Bayern Munich at Stamford Bridge, which all but guarantees their place in the next round, I think we can all agree on that. Should we be taking them seriously in their position among the favourites for the trophy this season? I checked this morning. I think they might actually be favourites for it now. Is that something that you would subscribe to, chaps, or do you think it's more of a case of a bit of naivety from an inexperienced coach at this level in the opposite dugout, and it made them look a little bit better than they actually are?
Yeah, I think there's something in that. Okay. I thought Bayern were good. There's no doubt about that. But the thing I thought certainly at halftime is Bayern have done this in some big games already this season. If you look at when they played Leipzig, if you look at when they played Leverkusen, if you look at when they played Borussia Mönchengladbach, when Gladbach were top of the table, Bayern were the better team in those games and played really good football. Now, that's something they couldn't do under Niko Kovac, and something they can do under Hansi Flick. They've been a lot more dynamic under him. But those were all games that they didn't win. And I was thinking at halftime, they've given Chelsea an opportunity here because, you know, they've really, that they need a goal to make this happen. And when those goals came in the second half, I think this is, we talked about turning points in the season of Juninho or Lyon, that this is a huge turning point, I think, in the season of Bayern, because if they can go out there, play with that sort of style, and then actually make it happen in a big game, this is a huge feather in the cap of Hansi Flick, because there's been a lot of talk about his position in recent days in Germany, and recent weeks actually, because bear in mind, he got the job from Kovac in November. By mid-December, before the winter break, they said, right, you're having it till the end of the season. So they've never been able to stop saying Rummenigge, Salihamidzic, how much they like him.
Offered him, but haven't they offered him a new contract? There was talk of that this week.
Not yet.
There's been rumour though, hasn't it? There's been
Absolutely. Yeah. But there's been a rumour. I think it's a counter rumour to Hansi Flick's people saying, well, look, you haven't signed him yet, and other clubs are interested. So you've got to make your move or not make your move. But it would have been counterintuitive, a bit like United with Solskjaer, for them to make him an offer without seeing what he could do in a big Champions League game.
Yeah.
And I think he's answered some of those questions.
Well, I think he'd be rubbing his hands together, though, because I don't know about you, but I mean, this Chelsea team are tailor-made for Bayern Munich. They are just awful without the ball. I hate them without the ball, Chelsea. There's a lot to like about them. Young players, exciting players who can do things. Without the ball, they're awful.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Chelsea facilitated that Bayern performance, I think. I think, you know, Bayern won't get the rub of the green like that in other big games this season. I think Chelsea were very, very open to the way they play, and thankfully, you know, Bayern had the players to take advantage of that. I thought Alphonso Davies was fantastic, but you've got to look at it. He had the freedom of the whole field, I think, to break up and down, and he was even allowed to push up so high and leave some space in behind because Chelsea were playing that way. But I'm not going to take anything away, and it'll be interesting to see how they manage without Lewandowski.
Yeah, that's a big thing, isn't it?
For 4 weeks now.
4 weeks with the injury. Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see again who comes in and what sort of, you know, they've got the second leg, and yes, it kind of looks over, but it'll be interesting to see how they play without him.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, it's interesting when we have this image of Chelsea, of this young team. I mean, it was interesting the way you put it, Luke, the way you said, well, is it a case of naivety in terms of the coach? Because if you look at the two teams, you know, it's so easy for Chelsea to come out and go, oh, well, we're a young team this season.
Yeah.
In their first 11, they've got three players under 25. Mm-hmm. Bayern have got three players under 25. Now, I realise there's a difference in terms of...
It's not just age, though, is it? It's the experience on the pitch and...
Yeah, sure. And I realise there's a difference in the pedigree of some of those players, and you look at Lewandowski and you look at Thomas Müller. And
he was excellent, by the way. We should touch on Thomas Müller, I think. You know,
yeah.
He was fantastic.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people thought he was done. They were like, oh, the football's gone a different way now. Mm. Somebody like Thomas Müller kind of thrive. And I think
he's had that his whole career, David.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that he's come back and he's now having this kind of renaissance, and he was magnificent. It was such a throwback, the way he was dropping off. He was creating so many problems for Chelsea because he just kept dropping into space as well, and extra man in midfield, and he made everything work.
Could you argue in the second leg that makes it even more dangerous for Chelsea when they've got to make at least a nominal effort to chase the game? The replacement for Lewandowski will be Thomas Müller. And the thing about him has always been, and well, he had that little bite at Pep during the week, and that's because Pep's never rated him, basically.
Yeah.
He's so difficult to pick up. Can you think of a player that's so indefinable, really, as Thomas Müller? I don't think Chelsea are smart enough defensively to be able to pick him up.
I don't think Chelsea's smart enough, and I think Müller's probably one of the top five in terms of most intelligent players around.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was just going to echo that in a slightly different way, perhaps, and say that this is a man who, to me, as a layman football guy, just he looks like a man who's built a career on really intelligent movement of dropping into space and just being entirely ruthless whenever he has an opportunity.
And I think it's
very hard to put your finger on what he's particularly standout good at.
Mm. Yeah,
other than that.
That's right. And I think it's indicative that he's become more and more influential under Hansi Flick, as we were saying. He's not nearly rigid enough for Kovac. I mean, Guardiola found it difficult to get his head around Müller and what he does, because he likes to, even in his own way, Guardiola likes to pigeonhole players. Mm. Like, he wanted to, if you look at Bayern, he wanted to make Ribery into a number 10. Ribery didn't get it at all. Mm. He wanted to make Müller into a midfielder. And then that was more Guardiola's decision. He looked at him and thought, no, actually, you're not good enough to play in the middle of midfield for me. Mm. And then, that was when he at least partially wrote him off.
And then other players worked. Like, for instance, he changed Kimmich's position.
Yeah.
So and that worked. So it's interesting. It swings around.
The final point on this Chelsea-Bayern game is I just felt it looked to me like a real wake-up call for a couple of those younger players that played on the right-hand side for Chelsea, Mason Mount particularly, and Reece James. Mm. Who Reece James, to me, is going to be a fantastic player. He's got all the tools. He looks brilliant at pretty much whatever he does. But up against that flying machine that's Alphonso Davies and then Serge Gnabry as well floating around, I think they found it very, very difficult.
Well, I think you look at younger players, and it's such a cliche, but it's true. It's a cliche because it's true that you're only as good as your experienced players. Mm. And I think
he had Azpilicueta behind him. He didn't really seem to help him an awful lot.
Yeah, but I do think the difference between, I was looking more at the other side, I think if you look at Alphonso Davies.
Oh, sorry, okay, yeah.
And the way that Bayern's defensive injury crisis has worked, which has put Alphonso Davies there in the first place, I think having Alaba next to him is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
I think you look at someone who's played a lot at left back, who's been expected to play other positions, who's an English speaker, who can talk him through the games. I think that is absolutely integral to Alphonso Davies' development. And I think also, if you look at him, I mean, you know, people have said, oh, he's gone in cold as a left back. You know, of course, he played left wing all the time for Vancouver Whitecaps, didn't he? And I wonder if Bayern always had this in mind with him, because if you look at the way he runs, I mean, so much has been made of his pace, but it's not just about pace, is it? It's about momentum. And if you start from a deeper position, and he created a goal, very, very similar goal to the first goal that he created against, it would be Freiburg just before Christmas, mm-hmm. in the Champions League, in the Bundesliga, sorry, where he started from halfway within his own half, played a little 1-2 and absolutely trained it up the left-hand side and then played the perfect ball in. And I think if you're that sort of player, if you've got that extra space to run into, it's almost helpful to you.
Yeah, because, I mean, he'll come and stuck against teams that, say, play in a deep block. So when he's played higher up the field, he might find it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
I think he's good enough, by the way, to create situations where he can get around that. But like you say, I think if he starts off so deep, it means somebody's going to have to come out and then you suck somebody out of position.
That's
which
right.
Leaves a gap for somebody else.
And on the other end, he's got the cover of Alaba as well, hasn't
precisely.
He?
Who, by the way, he's only 27. He's been around since God was a boy. I had no idea he was still so young. Yeah. Anyway, great performance by Bayern. Let's wrap up the final game then. The game at the San Paolo, which finished Napoli 1, Barcelona 1. It was set against the background of Lionel Messi saying in an interview with El Mundo that Barcelona aren't ready to win the Champions League this season. There's all sorts of other stuff going on at Barcelona, which I know you guys covered last week. They're currently fourth favourites for the Champions League, Barcelona. Is that about right for you, or did you see anything in that game at the San Paolo which made you think, They found it quite difficult to break down like a packed Napoli midfield, and they're not going to have it all their own way in the second leg.
Yeah, I think fourth, fifth, sixth kind of favourite is about right. I think at the moment you almost forget that Barcelona still have to play football matches. There's so much, there's so much going on off the field. There's like a new story every single week, and it's like, all right, oh, they've got a game tonight. All right, interesting. Yeah. And then, yeah, and when it actually does come to on the field, then no, then they're not particularly good at the moment. This Setien era was meant to usher in, I think, a new exciting, you know, brand of football. But if you looked in that game against Napoli, Valverde was probably still in charge, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think,
you know, it was very, very similar, very safe, very steady, very sideways. It was, yeah. And but if you've got the Messi factor, I think, and I think that is why, you know, Barcelona will still be feared by teams. And Napoli, I think, bought into that. They were scared. And that's why they set up the way that they did.
But I think, I mean, and you can, again, you can completely disavow me of this, but to me it just looked like, right, you pack Zielinski, Ruiz and Dem in the middle of the park, and you try and stop the supply coming to and from Busquets, and whenever Messi gets the ball, you just smother him.
Yep.
Right. And that's really, to me, that's all they did, but it worked really well.
Yeah, because Barcelona have got nothing else outside of Messi.
Yeah.
I know they've got other players. They've got other very good players. They've got Antoine Griezmann, who they spent, you know, God knows how much on. But it doesn't matter. That team still functions via Messi. And if he gets stopped, it's not even about Busquets anymore either. You can kind of let Busquets, I mean, in the second half, they let Busquets do his thing. But his passes were all sideways. They were going away. He wasn't penetrating anything. And Napoli were without Koulibaly as well, which is another thing. So they had to pack that midfield and they stopped Messi, I think, quite easily in the end.
I just wonder if there's still something in this for the second leg, really, because you look at the suspensions to Busquets, and Busquets is not as effective as he used to be. I think that's clear.
Can't be too harsh on him, can we? Because like, the goals nearer was just, he was essentially, I don't want to be too simplistic, but he had two of the greatest midfielders of all time around him, and now he doesn't have that.
Also, we have to underline, he's still a bastard. Did you see what he did to Dries Mertens?
It'll always be that.
Yeah.
It'll always be that.
Yeah, that's true.
And this also, it means it's more impactful when you do it to someone like Dries Mertens, who's got like a really nice face, and it makes you feel more guilty.
I don't think it makes him feel more guilty.
No, it makes you feel more sorry for Mertens, I mean.
Right. Okay, fair enough. I think that, and the suspension to Arturo Vidal, which was such a stupid red card.
Yeah, but he is stupid.
Well, okay.
You know, he's always got something like that. You know, it's like, it's a big European game. He's like, come on, Arturo, just.
For those who haven't seen it, it was classic. Yellow for the tackle, yellow for the reaction, instant red.
Yeah, and I think he was key for them as well in this tie.
Well, that's the problem. I think if you look at where Barcelona are at the moment, Rakitic and Vidal are way more important for them than they actually should be.
Yeah.
And that is a difficulty, I think, going into this second leg. On the other hand, you could look at it around the other way and say, is this the moment where Frankie de Jong steps up and starts making it his team?
No, because I don't think he's allowed to yet. And I don't think Setien, at this point in the season, I don't think Setien's going to go, oh, right.
Political reasons, you mean?
I think political, and again, just what we touched on, I think they're scared. They're playing everything very, very safe. There's going to be no radical change. I think when Setien came in, there was a feeling that there was going to be this radical change. Oh, it's going to be Frankie's team now. Ansu's going to be there. The young players are going to come through. No, they've sold some of the young players since Setien came in. Mm. They haven't really integrated anybody else. A few people have training sessions, which is not out of the norm. And the football hasn't improved by any stretch at all.
Can you give me a quick line on Arturo as well? I saw Arturo play in the Champions League last season at Wembley against Spurs, and he was absolutely amazing. He's brilliant.
I really, really like him.
Yeah,
he
wasn't in the team this week. He came off the bench. He didn't start the game. So I just wondered: what's the kind of latest on him?
He's a very good, very good player. And I think when he first started out at Barcelona, he did look very, very good. And that's probably because he didn't know any of the night spots were. And now he knows them like the back of his hand. Mm. Thus, his form has slipped.
Okay. I have to say, this puts Antonio Flores going on snowboarding when he's on loan to Granada in, like, you know, in the shade.
The best ever of these, and you'll have the detail on this, is the Yam Avila one, where he said he was going home, and he ended up, we got a photograph in the nightclub about 100 miles away.
Yeah, that they were on a French under 21 duty.
Yeah.
No, there were some big ones involved in that. Yeah. Ben Yedder, Griezmann.
Yeah.
That was a big night out.
Yeah.
That was the first, I think, the first big players found out by Facebook moment.
Was it really? That dates it nicely.
Yeah. Yeah,
they can't do anything these days. There's too many social media platforms as well. Somebody's recording them. Look at the PSG players as well on that party. And Herrera, I didn't really know he had that about him.
No, no. At least he didn't have his shirt off.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I'm rapidly trying to remember one that, was it Anton Ferdinand or Rio Ferdinand, and something to do with the Isle of Wight and a family member, and then ended up in New York.
Oh, right.
That was a good one.
I thought it might be in La Manga.
Yeah,
that's usually
where. Not normally with Premier League teams, isn't it?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
All right, very occasionally, Mr. Andy Brassel and I have a falling out or an argument about things we should be talking about on this show. And I'm not a fan of doing matches that have happened 4 or 5 days ago. I think, oh, come on, Andy, no one cares, blah, blah. And he dug his heels in this week, and that's fair enough, because Galatasaray went to Fenerbahce at the weekend and won 3-1. The first time they've won there, I believe, Andy, since 1999.
Yes.
And first, a couple of observations for me before you get into the good stuff. One, I've never seen more elbows thrown in a single match of football ever before. I think they were probably both spotted by the officials and unspotted, circa 15 elbows in the game. And the final point I just want to make very quickly is, for those of you who didn't see the game but have a vague idea in your mind about what an Istanbul derby is like, it was exactly like that.
It will meet all of those expectations.
So you got coaches sent off, 2 penalties in the game, a bust up on the bench when Belhanda was being subbed off and then seemed to grab a Fenerbahce player around the head, and then he got sent off for that. I couldn't work out whether they were still able to make the sub or not, because he got sent off.
No, he got sent off before he got to the touchline.
Okay.
So they had to send the sub on for Falcao in the end.
Right, okay.
But Belhanda does like a row.
Oh yeah, he does. And it is all to play for in Turkey. 1 point separates the top 4 teams in the Super League there. Fenerbahce are a bit further back, I think. But this was a big loss for them as well.
And Galatasaray have been on a real tear recently. When you consider that they got in a lot of big players.
They were on a real tear in this game, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, they got in a lot of big players last summer, like Seri, like Steven Nzonzi, who's already left again, like Radamel Falcao.
What's going on with Falcao? Sorry, what's the problem there?
He's been out injured for a lot of this season. Yeah. He's had a lot of little muscle injuries. I mean, I think this was his 8th start of the season in the Super League, but he's clearly a Galatasaray legend because he's scored the goal that put them in front in the last 10 minutes from the penalty spot, a lead that they never relinquished despite there being 10 minutes of stoppage time. And, you know, it's a huge moment for him because, as Luke was saying, they've not won a Fenerbahce for 20 years. It's an extraordinary achievement. And I think the fact that those current players have brought into it, I think, was sort of underlined by the fact that Marcão, their centre-back, they got over from Chaves in Portugal, he's been very, very good so far. There was some footage on his Twitter account of him getting the date of the game
tattooed on himself,
yeah,
wasn't it?
The 23rd of Feb 2020, yeah. And the club symbol tattooed on his arm. I suppose you've got 15 tattoos anyway, it doesn't really make a difference, but yeah, it's one up from Spurs releasing a club video of beating Arsenal, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
But this game I thought was a really impressive effort by Galatasaray because, as I said, they got in those players at the start of the season and it's all been a little bit stodgy, partly because of the absence of Falcao. There's not really been much goal threat. The football's been a bit slow and laboured. It's already come together in the last couple of months in terms of results. But I think one of the big things has been, he was a big figure in this game, Henry Onyekuru, who used to belong to Everton, went to Monaco in the summer, hasn't really worked out for him there. So he just came back for his second spell on loan at Galatasaray in the window. And it's made an enormous difference to have someone with that little bit of extra pace. Mm. And it was something that Fenerbahce found quite difficult to deal with.
They used him to great effect, particularly when Fenerbahce were pushing for an equaliser 2-1 down. And he obviously was able to put the cherry on the cake and finish it and make it 3-1.
Yeah, he sprinted clear. And
yeah, they appeared wary of him and his pace.
But that was one of my favourite bits of the game. When after that, when it got to 3-1, obviously, they wanted to run down the clock a little more. There was still like 3-4 minutes of the stoppage time left. So they took off both Sofiane Feghouli and Henry Onyekuru. And we talked about it at the start of the season. The rule that players have to leave the pitch at the nearest point.
You're not doing that in an Istanbul derby.
Except,
for goodness sake.
Except Feghouli was made to by the referee. And he was right in front of the Fenerbahce fans behind the goal. They started throwing seats at him, drinks at him, all the rest of it. And he was saying, look, I'm going to be brave. I'm going to keep going. And one of the Galatasaray staff came over and said, no, you're not. Sort of put his coat round him and made him walk across the corner of the pitch. Mm. At which point, obviously, a couple of Fenerbahce players said, what are you doing on the pitch? You're wasting time. Get off. Never mind. The bloke is absolutely getting pelters out there. But the brilliant thing was, as he came up to the bench, he gets a huge hug from Fatih Terim, Feghouli. It's like, you're my warrior.
And his hugs are good as well.
Imagine how good you feel after a hug from Fatih Terim.
All-encompassing.
Amazing. Yeah. But bear in mind, you know, it's very much in his image. If you go back to, it would have been 2012, just before Galatasaray won the title, they got a 2-2 draw there. And someone threw a lighter from the stands, which hit Terim above the eye. And he was bleeding. And the medical staff were trying to get him to get stitched up. Get off me. I'm fine. And then he came into the press conference with actually something stuck over his eye. And he always wants to show the players that, you know, he's a leader and all that sort of stuff. But the brilliant thing was, after there was the Terim Feghouli hug, Onyekuru came up straight next to him, put his arm round Terim, and one of the staff had his phone. So while the game is still going on, while Fenerbahce absolutely losing their shit, Terim and Onyekuru do a big thumbs up selfie in front of the main stand. It's incredible.
And obviously, Fatih Terim's in his fourth spell at Galatasaray as well.
Is it only his fourth?
Only his fourth. David, you'll be delighted to know that occasionally a football game broke out as well during all that kind of stuff. They did actually manage to play a game.
I'll tell you who was excellent.
That's a real shame.
Yeah, I know.
That's the last thing I want to see. Yeah.
Jean-Michel Seri, he was excellent. And there was a time where it looked like he might go to Lyon, actually, to replace Toussaint.
And the Barcelona as well. He was linked there.
All those years ago, actually, it's not that long ago. It was probably about 3 years ago, wasn't it, that he was linked with Barcelona. And he found it quite hard to recover when that move didn't go through. He felt that Nice kind of screwed him over that.
He's still a Fulham player. So if they were to be promoted this season back into the Premier League, Would he? Do you think? I mean, I don't know how much you know about it, but would he fancy another run out in the Premier League? He's 28 now, so maybe he'd give it another go.
I'm not convinced he'd be super keen to go back. A, because he knows there's the interest from big clubs in France. B, because maybe if Galatasaray could find a way to keep him. I mean, how do you go from Fenerbahce away to, you know, playing at Southampton with Fulham?
Yeah.
No offence, Southampton and Fulham.
Maybe you get to play at Old Trafford and all that kind of stuff as well. Yeah, I mean, look, I just wonder whether...
You're not selling it to me.
I wonder whether... Well, no, you're obviously one of the world's most famous football snobs, but I understand why he would prefer to go to France. But you right at the Barcelona point. I mean, when Fulham signed him, we talked about it at great length on Football Ramble Daily, saying, you know, I mean, God, this is a guy who was linked with Barcelona.
And Heck of a coup.
There was some weird admin reason why he didn't go to Barcelona. It wasn't anything other than that, I don't think.
They were calling him the French Xavi.
Yeah.
He was touted that highly about, I think he was very much the man at the moment. Mm. He was linked with every big club. I think Man United will probably link with him as well because they're linked with everybody. And then, you know, I think it's strange how his star has descended.
11 people have now tragically died from coronavirus in Italy. And as a result, 4 Serie A games were postponed last weekend due to the outbreak. And league games at Udinese, Milan, Parma, Sassuolo and the big derby d'Italia between Juventus and Inter look like they're going to take place this weekend without fans in a bid to stop the spread of the virus. Now, there's been talk, Andy, that the public ban's only running until Sunday, so they might move the derby d'Italia to Monday.
Yeah, that's what Inter are pushing for.
Right, and my question, I suppose, is just that how do you, I mean, clearly this is a very tragic event and that's the most important thing to mention, but how do we're a football show here, so how do we see this affecting the title race in Italy? Do we fear a fixture pile-up, for example, for Inter in their bid to win the first Scudetto for a long while?
Maybe. I think it's an issue because they've got to fit in the game with Sampdoria, pardon me, that was called off last weekend. Mm. So they've got to fit that in. The problem is with them trying to move the derby d'Italia to Monday, and Inter seem very keen on this because you would have fans there, is the fact that, well, what are you going to do with the Coppa Italia games later in the week?
Yeah,
because you've got Juventus playing the second leg of the semi on Wednesday, Inter on Thursday. It's very difficult. And when you factor in Champions League commitments, the extra game against Samp, is very, very difficult indeed. I suspect they would get some leeway further along the line because, you know, this is a public health emergency. You know, this is something that's way, way bigger than football. But in practical terms, for Antonio Conte, it is a difficulty. Of course, they're scheduled to play Ludogorets tonight. In the Europa League. And we've already seen the Ludogorets players turn up in Milan with not just masks on, but those sort of rubber surgeon gloves on as well. They're very sort of thorough about it. And that's going to be played behind closed doors.
Into a 2 up from the first leg, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But the game against Juventus is something that's totally different. I mean, the Derby d'Italia is enormous anyway. This is the biggest Derby d'Italia in absolutely years because they're both in the mix. I think not in normal circumstances, you would say that Inter are at a slight advantage just because they've got this situation where they didn't play last weekend, where they can make quite heavy rotation in terms of the Europa League this week, whereas Juve have been through the ringer for very little reward at Lyon. But it doesn't always work like that. It's about rhythm as well, isn't it? So, and rhythm and consistent form is something that Inter have struggled.
But they also need to
from the top.
They also need to go to Juventus and win.
Yeah,
really, I mean, they're 6 points behind with the game in hand. They need to win. I mean, if Juventus win, it's looking pretty bleak for them in terms of their league title push.
Even a draw, and I've got a feeling Juve will just look at that game and think, "All right, okay, let's just try and we can draw this and get away with it."
Maybe because what I think's been interesting about Juventus this season, and we touched on it when we were talking about the style that they were hoping for, but haven't really had from Sarri, is in a lot of games this season they've looked way more vulnerable than than you are used to seeing Juventus being.
Yep.
You're used to seeing them grind out games.
Well drilled.
Massimiliano Allegri,
yeah.
clearly. But yeah, exactly.
Well drilled, organised, and then I think now they leave more gaps, leave more spaces. And just as a result of Sarri's ball.
Exactly.
Sarri's ball. He's got a very specific ball.
He does, a very specific ball.
Yeah.
It's a busy ball boy. But so Szczesny has had to be better for them this season than you would expect him to. Buffon, when he's played this season, has had to be better for them than you would expect him to. So these are all issues. But you do wonder, with the scheduling, with what Inter are going to have to deal with as well, even though clearly they've reinforced the squad over winter, is this the perfect chance for Lazio?
Yeah, they'll be keeping a keen eye on it for sure. All right, guys, let's do our games of the week. I'm going to go, for entirely selfish reasons, to the Bundesliga, Borussia Dortmund against Freiburg on Saturday afternoon. The reason for that is it's going to be my first visit to the Westfalenstadion. I'm looking forward to it immensely, and I'm hoping for a good game. And it's not often I go to a European football match, as you guys know, so that's my pick for game of the week.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
Go on.
About you bringing out to Erling Haaland your famous line about, well, you see, if I go into H&M in Oslo, everything suits me.
Yeah. What I said was, it was actually Stockholm.
Oh, was it? Right.
Because okay. I'm tall and blonde, that's why.
Right.
So it's easy to find clothes that fit me quite well.
Okay.
I'm gonna exchange that kind of chat with Haaland if I bump into
good,
him.
He's
good. A man of similar profile to me. He just happens to be very talented and half my age. And, by the way, did you guys know he's the standing long jump champion?
Yeah, I did. Do you know how I knew that?
Go on.
Jules Breach told me. She knew before any of you.
Do you know how she knew?
Go on.
I told her on TalkSport. And the circle is complete. Anyway, it's not about that. It's about Haaland. Andy, what's your game of the week?
I'm going to go Derby.
Derby
for,
County?
It's on the continent.
Lyon versus Saint-Etienne.
Nice.
This weekend. It's a huge period for Lyon, starting with that Juventus game. Then you've got the Saint-Etienne derby. Then you've got a couple of meetings with Paris Saint-Germain, first at the Coupe de France semi-final, and then a little bit later down the line, they've got the Coupe de la Ligue final, the last ever Coupe de la Ligue game in France. But Saint-Etienne have been in terrible nick, and Lyon will not only relish the opportunity to get a much needed win as they chase a Champions League place, and they've not got enough points at home this season, but obviously they'll be delighted to have the opportunity to get the foot on the throat of Saint-Etienne while them and Lyon legend Claude Puel are suffering.
Yeah, and Saint-Etienne will have to rely, perhaps, if it doesn't go well for them on Sunday night, we'll have to rely on the old Lyon will always be in the suburbs line that they use every single year, right?
Yeah.
David, what about you?
I think the very easy thing would be for me to pick El Clasico.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing
it. We haven't talked about it. Maybe we'll talk about El Clasico next week.
No, I'm not going to go, so I couldn't give a shit. honestly, I genuinely couldn't. It's a game that, it's probably a conversation for another day, but I just think it's a game that's lost all of its spice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's no aggro anymore or anything.
Give us a minute or two on that. We've got time. You can give us a minute on that.
The hate feels just very plastic at the moment. It feels very...
You want hate in football?
Hate? Oh, man, I want way more hate. There's no haters anymore. You know.
This is the most irresponsible thing since Pete Donaldson said that people shouldn't drink water. If anything, we're drinking too much water and we're 80% water anyway. We don't need it. This is the most irresponsible thing. And again, I'm gonna link it into the Northeast. You're all wrong-uns. Why do you want more hatred in football?
Because sometimes football can get a little bit up its own ass and a bit boring.
I know what you mean, sanitised.
And you need some entertainment.
Those UEFA adverts you get in the middle of Champions League games where they say, like, they're really worthy about different things, very important things that they have to get right. I'd love to see one with just UEFA, Dave Cartledge's face, hatred.
Yeah.
Just more hatred.
Yeah.
So you're not interested in Sunday nights. Yeah, yeah. You'd rather be watching Lyon v Saint-Etienne then, in that case.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm going really poncy here, by the way, and picking Cadiz versus Almeria on Saturday.
Is that in the second division?
Yeah, it's in the second division in Spain.
Nice.
Reason is, that is an Andalusian derby, so there's going to be a lot of hate. also, it's at the top of the table. It's first, Cadiz, against third, Almeria. And Cadiz are very much the Spanish leads. This is my sell for this game.
Okay, yeah, you got to sell it in, mate.
So they always threaten to go up every year. They're a big club. Fans travel really well. Yeah. And they always just tend to slip away and fall apart. Cadiz are falling apart again, seemingly.
Right. Okay.
And this game is it's a big one. And Almeria, there's a lot of pressure on there because they've had a lot of money invested in to the club. Guti is manager there. Famous Guti.
Excellent. That's great. Great stuff.
He had to recently deny that he was out on the old tango and cash with his players, didn't he?
Oh, he loves the tango and cash. If we were talking about Arthur, I mean, Arthur and Guti would be the dream team.
If that happens, I want in. I want in. I want in.
I just want Arthur loan to Almeria for next season or something like that, and just let's just see
yeah, that'd get him on the straight and narrow, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so that's my game anyway. It's on YouTube to watch for free as well, so
that's important. Yeah. It's important, as I always say to that people need to be able to watch it.
Also this weekend, we should say, talking of free football, the Russian Premier League is back and all the games are on YouTube for free.
People, you can watch as much football as you want these days. You can watch as much football. There's always going to be a game on somewhere. If you just love football for football's sake, or you've not got enough hate in your life, get on YouTube. There'll always be a game on. I mean, Andy, you are as much a gatekeeper of the Games of the Week section as I am, and you've done more Games of the Week than me probably. Is he allowed to pick a second tier game?
Yeah, I picked one last week. I picked Hamburg versus St. Pauli.
Oh yeah, that's kind of an exception. That was worth it. You look like you're upset with me.
Yeah, yeah. I think next week I'm going to see what games are in the third tier.
Yeah. It's going to be a race to the bottom, quite literally.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.